Thank you. Okay. Let's see what I got going on here. Okay. Get my little hook up. I don't even know, how long am I talking for? Anybody know? What?
Take this home.
Okay, somebody will tell me something. I don't know. Whew. Okay, good morning. My name is Teresa. I'm an alcoholic. Grateful to be here. Grateful to be sober because of a loving God. Okay, I got a lot going on. Just give me a minute. What a self-centered experience, man, having to share. Oh, it's so uncomfortable. And I hate performance. I've been chilling all weekend. I've been having a good time. How you doing? What's up? And today I'm like, hi, how are you? Leave me alone. I gotta throw up, you know. People trying to introduce me to their sponsees. Yeah, how you doing? I don't care. I gotta go to the bathroom. Okay. Oh, that's so horrible. I can't even remember names of anybody. Okay, the oldest old timer of the Al-Anon told me I'll get $5 if I say her name. Now I'm not gonna get $5. I'm not even remembering her. Oh Lord. Yeah, Betty, thank you. Can I get the $5? No. Okay. I wanna thank the committee, everyone who has assisted and supported me getting here and being here. Thank you. All the work that you've done. We call you like the shadow warriors, you know? All y'all who work back there. You know, we're the speakers. The light is on us. Everybody's making a big deal. But y'all be doing your work. You get all the complaints, you know? And if anybody thinks it could be done better, then join the committee and it still won't work out your way. Oh, Lord. Okay. I'm always uncomfortable, and this is awkward. It just is for several reasons. Let me get some stuff out of the way. You know, I travel all over the world. I never knew that my experience can benefit others. And wherever I go in the world, I represent most of all of you, for this is my home. I grew up here. And so now I just feel the pressure. You know what I mean? I want to make you so proud. And also, this is, most of you know, Pacoima Group and Chandler and Radford, and this is usually, I think I might get a little emotional. Hold on a second. This was Mommy's convention. My mother, Sonia, a couple years ago passed away with 38 years of sobriety, and she lived and breathed every single year for 38 years that she showed up at this San Fernando convention. I had to make sure that she had the tickets, registration, banquet, get somebody to stay at the hotel. So it's just been really odd. I don't know. So I usually wouldn't come. This was like my reprieve for the weekend. You know what I mean? Mommy was hanging out with y'all. I get out here, be like, bye! And then come back searching for her to pick her up, and she, you know, wouldn't leave. So it's good to see a bunch of her home group members and people who are remembering her and miss her, and thank you so much. So that's awkward for me. It's really emotional. Okay. My sobriety date is March 29, 1990. But for the grace of God, sponsorship, fellowship, I've been with you all for the last 34 years. Thank you for my life. I want to welcome our new friends. Welcome home. Please keep coming back. And all the old timers, thank you for my life and my sobriety. I enjoy the countdown. I always feel bad for the newcomer that has like one day. And that's because I be hoping they came. Like, I'm always wondering if like a friend of yours was like, well, I'm going over here if you want to come with me, but you can't drink. And they're like, oh, okay. And then they come, you know, like there's going to be breakfast. And they're like, all right. And then they come and they're sitting around like, I can't wait till this is over, you know. And And then next thing you know, we're like doing a count, and they make them stand up, and they got one day, and then they get a book from an old timer, and everybody's clapping, and like that's traumatic. Do you know what I'm saying? So I'm always feeling bad for them. I'm like, you can like never drink the same again. Like we've ruined it for you, like completely. And you thought you were just stopping by. So. I want to thank my sponsee, Lydia, for coming, hanging out. Also, Vanna got a ticket and a date. He had a date. I love that my sponsee just showed up. This is a date. I didn't even know you were dating. Okay. I'm tripping, y'all. Okay. Oh, Lord. All right. And then sometimes it's uncomfortable when so many people have heard my story. A lot of times I have a conversation with God beforehand. I'm like, you know, we got some extra juicy stuff we can talk about. But nope, that doesn't come out. Here goes the story. I invite anybody who's new, please listen to similarities and not the differences and ask yourself questions like that happened to me. I felt that way too, and perhaps this program can work for me. You know what I heard when I was new, and I've been sharing this often, is that you may not want what I have and you may not want what we have, but in the quietness of your own space tonight, you get to ask yourself if you want what you have. And that was a game changer for me when I heard it that way. See if I give you a Reader's Digest. I'm born addicted. I came into this world loaded. I was unwanted. I am a product of rape, according to mommy. My father felt that it was a different situation. My mother's Puerto Rican. My father's African American. Daddy was attracted to mommy because we have big families. This is the other thing I was tripping out when I was sitting here. Okay, as Latinos, I still haven't gotten used to this in AA. Like, y'all giving me the floor. You know, like, everybody listening to me. You see, as Latinos, we usually talk all at the same time. You know what I'm saying? And everybody's talking, and you just kind of jump in. I remember my partner, we were hanging out with the family, and she was trying to give somebody the address, and she was waiting for the floor. And I was like, that's never going to happen. Just say the address. And they were, like, way across the room. And she was like, you serious? Like, yeah, just stand up. Just say the address. And she did. She was like, 573. And they were way back. Oh, 573, I got you. I was like, that's how we do this. So it's still awkward when y'all just staring at me. I'm like, y'all don't want to talk amongst yourselves? I can keep talking. Anyway. I'm like, they're actually paying attention, okay? Oh, my God, okay. Oh, Lord, so I'm born addicted. I come into this world loaded. Mommy left me in the hospital. She told my father, if you want it, you can have it. Keep it. Keep it away from me. I don't want to see it. I don't want to touch it. And I don't want to hear it. Until my dad and my abuela, my grandmother, brought me home. Now, they had to give me alcohol. So if you're addicted to alcohol and drugs, you have to be given that to be weaned off. You just can't, like, stop. So they were giving me alcohol, hoping to wean me off. This part of the story don't change. So it's so funny because mommy used to take pride in this story. You would think she would be embarrassed. But I've spoken, you know, times in Pacoima. Mommy's come with me several places, and she sits there in the front. She'll be like, yep, that's me. I did it. I stand on the, you know, the thank you line. She'll be right next to me. Uh-huh, you're welcome. Anyway. Now, the family wanted to figure out how to get mommy to at least look at me, touch me, or something. And so they left me alone in the house with her. And she said I started crying, and she put the pillow over her ears to muffle out the noise, and she kept saying, shut that thing up, why am I hearing that thing? And she went in the living room and discovered she was alone with me. She took a pillow and she began to smother me. And certainly it'll be their fault. They left me alone. I died of crib death, no? And mommy said that while she was smothering me, for some reason, she heard and remembered them saying, if you give her alcohol, she'll stop crying. So there was a law set in that home that a bottle of alcohol was to remain in my mouth. And the only time that bottle was to be removed was to be refilled. So I drank my entire life. I came in this world loaded, and I drank for 24 years, every single day, all day, until I came into these rooms 34 years ago. When I say that I am an alcoholic, I'm grateful that I truly understand what the disease of alcoholism is, and that I was taught to do a thorough first step. Where most of you I am jealous of sometimes, or I feel sorry for you. I'm jealous because many of you know exactly what it was like when you took that first drink and what it felt like and how it went down and what it did to you and for you. And then I feel sorry for most of you because it wasn't until alcohol that you found some level of freedom. And I came in this world loaded. So I didn't have to go through that phase that I hear many of you share. Mommy did not account for this, and certainly I wouldn't known, and I was a baby. Her hope was that I would die from alcohol poisoning, and so I should have, no? If you give an infant alcohol, let alone a fetus, I'm supposed to die. No nutrition, no food, no nothing, only alcohol? I shouldn't be standing here in front of you. But what nobody knew was that I had alcoholism. Instead of dying from it, my body received it, welcomed it, and demanded more of it. That's called an allergic reaction. That's an abnormality. So I drank every day. I drank in my house. I was fed alcohol. I didn't have to go out and hide. I didn't have no peer pressure. I didn't have to drink with friends. I drank in my house. Later, my grandmother introduced certain foods. I always say I didn't learn about the four food groups till I got to this program. I still have issues. I could live on potato chips and chocolate. The first thing Abuela did was she took green grapes. She peeled the skin off the grapes. She soaked it in wine, and that's how I would eat it. Other than that, I couldn't eat anything. Then she got an orange, peeled the skin off the outside, opened up the top, put rum in it. That's like a screwdriver or something, no? No, that I really, okay? She put, and then I would suck it, you know, and then open it and eat the carne. I still don't know how you say that in English. Whatever's inside the orange. Pulp? Whatever. I don't know. That sounds strange. Pulp. Carne is better. Okay? I grew up half the year in New York in the island of Manhattan and half the year in Puerto Rico. I didn't see anything different in either one of those islands. Most of my family members are pimps, dealers, hustlers, gangsters, heroin addicts, and they're also police officers, politicians, and priests. Also, we're mafioso. They're all the same. The very character defects we talk about around here, we're breathing on that. You can't survive the world we come from without it. We're very tribal people. We love rice and beans and chuletas and salsa, and it's all about partying, and it's a mayhem of dysfunction, but that's just kind of woven into the culture and the people. The only person in our family that has a problem is somebody who ain't got no teeth and who ain't got a job. For years until my cousin, you know, Nancy died, they talked about Nancy. And she went, oh, they always bothering me about my drinking. I'm like, just get a job and some teeth. And that's it, Nancy. And they'll leave you alone. We die from cirrhosis of the liver and kidney failure and falling down and cracking your skull and getting shot and ODing. Everybody has diabetes and you get your legs amputated. I remember my uncle's legs were amputated. The doctor said, you got to stop drinking. Now, he ain't got no legs. Leave him alone. Why you want him sober now with no legs? That don't make no sense. That's crazy to me. Let him like be so loaded he think he's walking. You know what I'm saying? It don't matter. Déjalo. When you die, we put your drink and your drug of choice in the coffin with you and we celebrate, man. I'm telling you, when Titi Lidia died in Puerto Rico and we have most of our funerals in the living room and we hang out and we party. But I swear to you, when my aunt died, she didn't have her Budweiser in her hand. She didn't look right in that coffin. And I put a Budweiser in her hand and I swear she smiled. I'm telling you, to this day, I swear, all of a sudden she looked happy in the coffin. So this is a way of life. The black sheep in the family was my grandmother, my father, my cousin Petra, and my brother. They didn't drink. Nobody wanted to be like them. Nobody liked them. I don't even know how they survived us. And I also grew up with adjectives you guys gave me when I got here. I grew up with physical abuse, verbal abuse, sexual abuse. That's also generational. Recently, my cousin is funny. He was telling me how he felt so sorry for me. That he used to tell his dad if they could just bring me home. And it's funny because he was like, but what I didn't realize, Terry, was that my father was a pedophile. If we would have brought you home, he would have jacked you up too. And he starts laughing. I'm like, I know, right? That would have been messed up. I thought I was saving you, but I would have made it worse. Anyway. I was unwanted, unnecessary, and insignificant. It was as though there was an announcement that was made that says nobody wants her. We can't stand the fact that she's even here. She refuses to die. So you can let out all of your frustrations and your deviances on her. I was not present for my experience. I had no heartbeat. I was emotionally disconnected. I always had a smile on my face. I lived like in that movie, Death Becomes Her. I would have broken bones and I would be bleeding and I would just be smiling. I was emancipated at the age of 14. I always took care of my mother. She was the drunk. She was a mess. At the age of 14, the judge said I was too mature to be placed with the foster family. I came out of juvie after having a fight with mommy. And the judge said, your daughter is not a juvenile delinquent. She does not have issues with authority figures. But what they found is that when she's left longer than 5 minutes in a room with you, something happens to her. And we cannot place her. So I was emancipated. I'm a grown woman at 14. All my friends are 15, 20 years my senior. At that time, my man is 26. He beats me on a daily basis, and you cannot tell me that isn't love. That's my man. You mind your business. I learned how to dress up my outsides. I didn't know I was dying on the inside. I don't know nothing about a spiritual malady. What are you talking about? I can hang out in Wall Street and I can hang out in Spanish Harlem or in Harlem. What? Alcohol was my friend, my lover, my companion, my therapist, my nurse. I don't know if alcohol talked to you, but it talked to me. And it said, if nobody loves you, I love you. If nobody wants you, I got you. It's you and me against the world. You got this. See no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. I wasn't present, man. I lived in a coma. Alcohol told me when to get up in the morning and when to go to bed at night. Where I was going to live, where I wasn't going to live. If I was in a relationship, if I wasn't. Who I was in a relationship with. If I was going to work and if I wasn't. I didn't do a New Year's resolution. I didn't say tomorrow's going to be different. I wish I didn't have to live like that. This is the way it is. As I got old, I began to live like Michelle Pfeiffer on Scarface. And I progressed to that outside issues. I didn't have to go in the street looking for it. We put it on the streets. I wasn't planning on changing that life. What life was there to change? My alcoholic life is a normal one. I came in this world with it. Alcohol was my puppet master. It was my higher power. I don't know how to breathe without it. It is the blood that runs through my veins. And I sipped my drinks. I didn't chug a lug. I didn't dance butt naked on tables. I remember when I came here, I told my sponsor, maybe I'm not an alcoholic. Y'all be like, one's too many, a thousand's not enough. I don't know nothing about that. I sipped my drinks. And my sponsor took me to downtown Skid Row to introduce me to myself. And show me that if you've been drinking as long as I have, you only need a little bit. I don't need a lot. So what happened to me? How did I end up with you? I hear a lot of stories in these rooms, and thank God you told me to listen to similarities and not the differences. It took a long time before I heard somebody who had my story. I've been saying this lately. Not everyone who comes into the rooms is a bull in a china store. You see, I wasn't the drunk that made any waves. I didn't cause any problems. I didn't burn any bridges because I didn't establish any. I didn't bother nobody. You see, alcohol allowed me to have that Harry Potter cloak. God forbid you see me and know that I'm in the room. Because if I make a noise or if I make a sound, you'll do something to me. So I bothered nobody. It's just me and alcohol, leaving my own little bubble, my own little world, and we'll be fine. I remember my brother had a hard time thinking I was an alcoholic when I got here. No, mommy, we can identify. That's the drunk. My uncle's a heroin addict. Look at them. They're a mess. I keep a job. I have business. I look good on the outside. I got money. How did I end up here? You see, this something happens where most of us end up meeting. There's this crossroad we get to. Regardless of how we started our relationship with alcohol, and when you cross that invisible line, this is the one area is where it becomes most similar. And that is, for whatever reason, at the age of 24, alcohol betrayed me, abandoned me, and left me emotionally retarded with no coping skills. But the way you describe it, you say alcohol stops working. That's a game changer. I don't mind doing incomprehensible, demoralizing things when I don't notice. If you knew, you hear most of us talk about all this demoralization and how devastating it is, it's because sanity is starting to return. But when I'm in the midst of my disease, the insanity of all of it is that I cannot remember with sufficient force. I don't remember what happened last night, all the devastations, how many on the brink of death I was at, how many times I could have been killed by serial killers. I'm not thinking about any of that. How many hospitals I went in and out of because I was dehydrated. And they had to try to bring me back to life. I don't remember that. I end up in these embarrassing moments, but I think the people who are tripping is you, not me. But what happens when that changes? When now I begin to notice, where I walk in a bar and I hear them say, look what the trash brought in. How long they've been saying that? I can't tell you how long they said it, but I remember when I heard it. And I try to like laugh it off, I couldn't shake it off. You know what I mean? I saw the look of disgust on my grandmother's face. And abuela, pero qué te pasa? What's the matter? Why abuela looking like that? And I noticed that daddy stopped talking to me. When did daddy stop talking to me? And more importantly, why do I care? And I never worried about burning bridges. I didn't worry about having people in my life. Now I'm worrying about where is everybody at? It was as though I had been resuscitated. I'm now present in this thing you call life. I had never been here at the age of 24. And since I was a little girl, they had put a glass of water and a candle in front of me at the age of 5. At the same time, at age of 5, I lose my virginity from a cousin that rapes me. And then I'm turning around sitting in the land of spirit and being told to read people. And my brother made fun of me, the golden child. And I would heal people. And I learned about transcendental meditation. And I would go into the world of spirit. It was so beautiful there. And talk to the ancestors and the angels. And then I would come in the physical world and it's like lions and tigers and bears. Oh my. And I don't know how to live in the physical world without being detached and disconnected. And now I'm trying every combination so I could check out again. I want to go back into a coma. And no matter what I did, I was still present for my experience. That was horrible. My bottom lasted 6 months. Some of y'all do that for years. And since I couldn't check out again and get flatlined, the best thing I can do was to invite death into my life. And I believe it's a cold thing to invite death in your life and death don't even take you out. At this time, I had a contract out for my life. My uncle told me, you know you're in trouble when the good guys and the bad guys are looking for you. I never want to forget that I went to where they were at. I told him, I'm here. I ain't got nothing he wants. Hoping he'd take me out. I waited 2 hours. And they threw me out of there. And I did the aimless walk. The walk with no purpose, no agenda, no destination. It's just a walk. And I ended up in a church. That's all. Wasn't looking for the church. It's not even a straight line. And I stepped inside this church and I felt the presence. It's more like what I feel when I come into the rooms. But it was distinctly separate from me. And I said a prayer that I believe is different than any other prayer. I know that it came from the depths of my soul. I didn't think anything was listening to me. I wasn't quite sure if my prayer was even going to be heard. Here is where I believe the gift of desperation and the window of the grace of God collide with one another. In the 12 and 12, it says, only an act of providence can help a drunk like me. But for the grace of God, I stand before you sober today. Seconds and inches, seconds and inches. In this moment, there I stood. And I said, God, please allow me to feel the peace that I feel in this church inside of me. I needed one moment for my head to shut up. My skin to stop, you know what I mean? Crawling and my stomach to stop turning. I said, I lost my hustle, yo. Oh, that was horrible. Couldn't shake that. I had no idea that prayer was going to change my life. I left there. I went to daddy. I said, daddy, help me. I ain't never asked for help before. I ain't no punk. My father said, with all the love that a father can have for his daughter, he wished he could tie me up and put me in a closet. Daddy's been powerless too. He said, but you're standing in the middle of a crossroad and there's three directions you're headed. You're so close to them, you could taste them and smell them. And that's jails, mental institutions, and death. But there's another road, it's called recovery. You don't know anything about it, and neither do I. But if you give it a try, and if it doesn't work out, the other three will be waiting for you. That remains true to me to this day. And I came to sunny California where I thought everybody was sober. I thought this was the sober state. I really did. I told Daddy I have to go to that sober state. And that's because you have a tradition which is called attraction rather than promotion. Mommy had been sober 4 years, and my cousin found my mother in Venice Beach eating out of garbage cans and brought her to a meeting. My cousin was my mother's Eskimo. And I remember I used to come out here to visit you people. I did the musician picnic, the meeting after the meeting. Y'all would have those dances with the ball and the soda and hot dogs. Very strange. And you would go to the Denny's or whatever afterwards, and everybody, ah, quack, 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 quack. I just hear everybody laughing, ah, quack, 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 quack. And there was this woman named Michelle used to come visit in New York, and she'd just be, how you doing? Very strange. And maybe most of you messed up my drinking. I didn't know that a seed was being planted. I didn't even know I was paying attention to any of you. Mommy needed you. I was telling somebody not too long ago, I remember mommy did an amends to me out in some, I don't know, there was a ballet, I remember a fountain, I don't know. Many of you worry a lot about doing amends to your family as a child, right, of an alcoholic. I just have to tell you that when mommy did it, it did matter to me. Anyway, if that's comforting. She was all nervous, it was all deep for her, I was like, whatever, you good, you know what I'm saying? Damage done, yo. You know what I mean? Move on. Anyway. Okay. You'll be making a bigger deal than it is. No, okay. Oh, Lord. I remember the smiles, the warmth, the camaraderie. I remember you never shunned me, roll your eyes at me, suck your teeth at me, or try to shove a pamphlet down my throat. Thank you. I think you had done that, I would have figured out how to die out there before I proved you right. I detoxed on a Greyhound bus, had my last drink in El Paso, Texas. I believe this man saved my life. More people die from alcohol detox than anything else. I was having DTs and everything saved my life and everybody else on that Greyhound bus. Could you imagine? After I came back after that drink, I was like, "Ooh, that was intense. Everybody all right? We good? I don't know what that was all about." Okay. Jeez, okay. Oh, Lord. And I arrived in downtown Los Angeles on March 29, 1990, wearing a size 1 pair of pants, 2 pants underneath, a huge sweatshirt, 4 months pregnant, didn't have a heartbeat by the time I got here. That was the 4th child I had lost. Have not had the honor and the privilege of having children ever since. I'm reminded today of a lot of the damage that's happened to me through the years. I got new adjectives today, like fetal alcohol syndrome and PTSD, something like that, anxiety. That's a cute one. fibromyalgia. I could be having all kinds of stuff. Every time I go to the doctor, something else. Let's add menopause. That's deep. I tell people with all those, you just got to give me a minute. I am present for my experience. And my mother picked me up and dropped me off in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous because you told her to. Mommy couldn't help me any more than that. I got sober in South Central Los Angeles. I am proud of the breed that I come from. I got sober in Crenshaw, Alano in 9604. Yeah. The hustlers are the hustlers, the liars and the liars, and the cheaters and the cheaters, boy. We went into the meeting and mommy turned around to walk out. I asked her where she was going and she said, this is as far as I can go with you. And she turned me over to the very people who had saved her life. Now, I always mention this woman, Marcy, because she is the one that I believe set the anchor and the foundation and the cement underneath my feet. I walked into the room and this woman, another Puerto Rican, Latina, petite, she's so petite. She worked with a lot of newcomers. If you ever took Marcy, if Marcy ever said she wanted a ride, boy, you'd never get home for like 3 or 4 days. Marcy walked straight up to me with purpose and certainty and clarity and a mission, boy. She was solid. And she walked straight up to me and she said, hey, baby girl, we've been praying for you. God don't make no junk, baby girl. You deserve to be here. You a child of God. And she took her hands, put it on my face, moved me close to her. I still see it and feel it. I don't think nobody ever looked at me. But she looked at me. I have been invisible for 24 years. I have no name. I have no identity. And she looked at me, she put her hands on my face, moved me close to her, and she said, you got a beautiful light inside of you, baby. And we just got a clean house for that light to shine. I still hear her. You know the irony of that? This total stranger said something completely contrary to anything I had heard. Maybe my grandmother said it, maybe daddy did, but it was muffled with all the noise. But I believed Marcy. I believed her. And I wanted to know what she saw. What was that that she saw in me? What light? I know that there's a light in the world of spirit. I know that spirits exist and ancestors, but what light is this woman talking about? And she sat me down in the front and she told me to listen like the dying only could and to examine my relationship with alcohol. And I started listening to you guys and the things you were sharing. I'm like, you trying to tell me this is not normal? What are you saying to me right now? I tell people, maybe I'm very Latina, we're very Telemundo, you know, very dramatic. But like meetings to me is like a telenovela, you know what I'm saying? Especially I got sober in South Central, man. They was like, what? They gave me the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's a vivid writing, my goodness. That's a pop-up book. That book be tripping me out. Everything I tell you, maybe because I'm very Latina, very dramatic. You know what I mean? Could you imagine sponsoring me? I used to read that book. I'd be like, oh, what? Hi. Oh, my God. What's happening? Ay, Dios mío. ¿Qué? What? No. Ay. Oh. That's how I was. Ay, Dios mío. And they're like cliffhangers. You know what I mean? What's going to happen? What's going to happen? You know, what's going on? It was very strange. You don't have to read in between the lines. I know they got the plain language, whatever you need, whatever turns you on. Look, I was excited because you were excited. I didn't have the capacity to think of anything. This is not an intellectual program. This is the language of the heart. And as I listened to this message of depth and weight, where you guys talked about the lives that you came from and the transformation, that you had tapped into a source of power, and I knew that I needed another power because I've never lived on my own power. Where am I to find this power? You said deep down inside in every man, woman, and child is a fundamental idea of God. It lived inside of me. That may not be a big deal to you, but it was to me. I love the traditions. I learned the traditions way before the steps. I'm a member because I say I am. I have a desire. They still make fun of me today, my home group. I have a desire. I'm a member. I don't like you either. It's gotten better. I don't like you. It don't matter. You have to help me. I have a desire. And that's it. Principles before personality. I have to put my personality to the side. I don't know about y'all. I know that you think because New York is a melting pot and we're all... No. We're very segregated. I came into this room, I'm like, where are the Puerto Ricans? I'm sorry, I can't talk to you. You rice and beans, you do salsa? No, sorry. No. I could take the train with you, working the job, but we're not friends. You understand me? And I was like, oh, no. I can't hang out with you. We're the Puerto Ricans. And they were like, that's none of your business. It doesn't matter here if you knew your political views. It doesn't matter your religious background, your cultural background, your race. None of that matters. That we're all one here. I'm not interested in your sports, what books you read, what movies. Let me tell you, once we start having those conversations, I don't like you. I don't like you. And for somebody who needs you, thank God you have a tradition that says set that to the side. I want what you have, because I don't want what I have. And I don't know how to live without alcohol, but you do. I had to dance with the women. Of course I didn't like women when I got here. I didn't like my mother. I didn't like myself. Talk about willing to go to any lengths. I used to have to go around women and say, excuse me, you know why I don't like you? I don't like you because I see a beauty in you that I don't have in me. Can you show me? I see a strength in you that I don't have. Can you teach me? They burned into my consciousness. Trust God, clean house, be of service. Trust God, clean house, be of service. That this was a spiritual program of action and more action. That I had to uncover, discover, discard, uncover, discover, discard. This wasn't therapy. I would call my sponsor and she would say, I start talking, did you write about it? No, and she would hang up on me. And you would think that I would be like, oh my God, how dare she? Instead, I'd be like, ooh, I better write about it and call her back. I wanted to discover that power that was in me, and the only way to get there was through the steps. That these were tools designed for living. So I put down the drink and picked up the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got no gray area and I got no in between. I needed to learn how to live life. You told me to get on my knees and pray for the obsession to be removed. Does that make sense? No, I don't care. You told the disease was centered in my thinking. They used to call it the stinking thinking committee. You told me don't listen to it. I used to go to meetings on the bus and talk to myself out loud. I used to say, shut up, leave me alone. They told me about you. I'm going to a meeting, I'm calling my sponsor. Leave me alone. I would be in the meetings and I was terrified when we would have to pray out because the disease was waiting for me outside. And so I went with you to the meeting after the meeting and hung out with you till I was so exhausted I just went to sleep. The patience that my sponsor had, I would call her throughout the whole day. What do I do now? What do I do now? What do I do now? And she guided me through the day and guided me through these steps. I've been in awe of this. I got nowhere else to go. And then I watched something happen to Teresa. I've watched something happen to me. I found out that my name is Teresa. That I'm amongst a fellowship and that I belong. I found out that I can have purpose and meaning in life and significance and that I matter and that you matter. And I said, God, take all of me. What will you have me be? What will you have me do? And I've been the caretaker and the caregiver to most of my perpetrators and my abusers. I went back and made amends to most of my abusers. I got sponsees who've caused major harm and still barking about doing it. What? I wanted freedom. Freedom from the bondage of self. Inventory. It amazes me that people struggle with inventory. That's the disease of alcoholism. Whenever somebody says, I can't do the inventory, you need to go back to step one. You're confused of what we're doing here. Just go back to one, that's all. And then add my name to your inventory. T-H-E-R-E-S-A. Just add my name there, you'll be fine. I don't know about y'all, but what I found about inventory, there's something about this that stood out for me. It says we squander the hours. That it actually has the ability to kill us. And I was like, you mean to tell me? Sobriety has been something for me, y'all. I was like, you mean to tell me that every day that I let go by to allow people to rent space in my mind, in my spirit, I'm giving them permission to keep violating me? Where's the pen and paper? And for some of you, I'm like, you ain't never did a hit list before? To this day, my cousins and their mafia, they call me like, yo, Terry, anybody messing with you over there in California? I'm like, yeah, they are. I have a hit list, but I can't give it to you because I got to do the fourth column and talk to my sponsor. I wish I could. I got a big list. I can give you addresses. You know what I'm saying? And as I've cleaned house, and I asked God, what's my purpose? I began to give to those who didn't give me everything I did not receive. I couldn't complain about the type of mother that mommy wasn't to me. Mommy used to stretch my spiritual muscles. I believe that mommy's job was always like, you're not that spiritual, watch this. I'd be like, you're right, you got me. I remember one time mommy was celebrating. I think it was like the last time she was taking her cake, you know, that she was able to. Mommy had Alzheimer's. Over in Pacoima, and I picked her up. I was trying to get her out the house. And we got into this big old fight. Mommy used to always beat up on me right before she died. She used to beat the living daylights out of me. We went back to childhood, you know what I mean, all the abuse. And she was beating me up, and I put her in a headlock and body slammed her and got her in the car, strapped her in. I was speaking at the meeting. She was taking a cake. I pull up to Pacoima, my grand sponsee was a secretary. I tell mommy, get inside. And she goes inside and my grand sponsee comes out and she goes, your mother's in there saying you beat her up, but we know your mother. And she told me, it's okay if you don't want to come in and speak. I said, where else am I going to go? And I go in there, and now mommy has Alzheimer's, right? And I go in there, typical of back in the old days, where we don't remember anything. She totally forgot what happened. And I'm in there giving her a cake. Happy birthday to you. And she's like, oh my God, thank you so much, that's my daughter. And I shared. And I said, I just put her in a headlock and I body slammed her. And if you're new, keep coming back. Thus we grow, you know what I mean? It's work in progress, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. I know where most of you, we recovered together as family, and most of you knew I don't usually go to meetings with mommy. If I did show up, it was the Al-Anon in me. I want to thank all of you for your patience with me. I appreciate you, because I would normally show up at Pacoima going, this her home group, where's her sponsor? I believe that when mommy took her last breath, I swear you guys, when mommy took her last breath, it was like poltergeist. She was like, this house is clean. I knew that the end was near because there was a nothingness between us. What I was taught in this program is any disturbance to find out why it's blocking me from the sunlight of the spirit. That it was an opportunity for growth. How else am I supposed to learn if I don't have the disturbance? Just a little bit before mommy died, there was a nothingness and it was strange. And I remember calling my sponsor going, I'm a little concerned. Do I really care about her? I'm confused. What's happening to me? And he said, both. You've always loved her. Mommy and I have had a love-hate relationship. What an opportunity that was for me to clean house. It's been an honor and a privilege to be a sister to my brother. I thank Alcoholics Anonymous for allowing me to stretch my spiritual muscles in that area. He was one of my biggest physical abusers. And he got cancer, single dad. I helped take care of my brother, stretch my spiritual muscles, y'all. And I did for him everything that wasn't done for me. And before I put him on the ventilator, they said, is there anything you want to tell your sister? Because we don't know how long it'll be that you'll be able to talk again. And he said, I love you. What? My uncle died with 12 years. He had cancer. He was also my biggest abuser. I thank each and every one of you for the support and the love that you gave him and you gave me and you gave us. And my daddy with Parkinson's. Oh, I enjoyed being a daughter to my daddy. I believe that when daddy took his last breath, he knew that the arms of AA and God was finally wrapped around me and his baby was safe. You know, the irony is that a lot of these people didn't want me. They wanted me gone. Look who's here. Isn't that crazy? It is so weird. They're all gone. And I'm here. And now they're angels watching over me. I grieve the opportunity to experience them with a clean house. And to see what it's like where I hear most of you share what it's like to get your families back and have these loving, healing, healthy relationships. I didn't get an opportunity to really experience that. Sobriety is a whole lot for me, folks. This is a way of life. I call God a show off. He takes a girl like me, unloved, unwanted, unnecessary, insignificant, picks me up, dusts me off, builds me up so you can see what this power can do. I can't take no credit for it, just a mustard seed of willingness. I don't know how not to give this program away. My phone rings like central office. I've been online for years. Thank you for those of you who continue to do meetings in Zoom. There have been many of us who have needed it, who lived in remote areas, disabled, people who are sick, seniors. Saved my life. I've set up hospice 6-7 times. I've lived in ICUs and been able to just push a button and get in touch with another alcoholic. I've been saying this lately, which is quite interesting to me. There's a lot of things that have been taken away from me without my permission. You know, I heard you folks say, God does this without my permission. I have yet to see that. Maybe one day. I always say, don't hold me to everything. I usually tell my sponsees, you know, remember what I told you last week? That was deep, right? It no longer applies. I don't know what I was talking about. It sounded good, though, at the time. It was deep, too. It was deep, right? I know. I don't know. I did another inventory, found out, you don't know what you're talking about. So maybe this will change, but this is what fascinated me about the higher power that you guys found here. You see, the higher power that you found, that lived inside of me, that lives inside of you, needed your permission. The Alpha, the Omega, the creator of all things, this infinite power that is unmeasured, the creator of the insects and of all the universe, is just waiting for me to give permission. It says we let God discipline us in the simple way we have outlined. We let. We ask. We make a decision to turn our will and our life over. I ask to remove my fear. I ask to remove all of me, good and bad. Needs my permission. It says I will watch God do for me what I cannot do for myself, but it will not happen without my permission. And I'm in love with that power. For you see, I've had a lot of higher powers in my life. And all of them did things without my permission. You see, my virginity was taken away from me at 5 without my permission. My childhood and my innocence was robbed from me without my permission. I've had houses given to me and taken from me without my permission. I've had cars that I really enjoyed just taken, totaled, without my permission. Friendships. Oh my goodness. I've had people say, oh my God, I love you, Teresa. You're everything, all that in a bag of chips. I just love you. And then one day you are no longer relevant. You are insignificant and unimportant. You don't even exist without my permission. I've had people say, sponsor me, the best sponsor. Oh my God, I'm not working with you anymore. Without my permission. I had cancer take away my uncle without my permission. Parkinson's take away my daddy without my permission. Alzheimer's take away my mother without my permission. Cancer take away my brother without my permission. I helped raise my nephews, and when my brother died, their mother showed up and said, those are my children. Drop them off in my house and leave us be. Without my permission. Thank God for the 12 steps. It's the only tool that I had. But there's something that's been given to me that nobody could take away. There's something that Alcoholics Anonymous and God's grace has given me that cannot be taken away, and that's my sobriety. That is mine. It's mine. And it requires my permission. It is mine to polish. It is mine to expand upon. It is mine to improve. And it is mine to give away. And it is only I who will throw it away. And I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. So if you knew, I don't know what you're going to do. In Spanish, we used to say, allá tú. I don't know what you're going to do. I don't get a donut. I don't get a brownie if you join. All I know is that this is what we have done. If you want what we have, then you do what we do. There's so many people tell me, oh my God, Teresa, I want what you have. Do you? Are you willing to do what I've done? Probably not. So, you know what, you guys? I'm in rare form. Life's been in session. You know, just recently, what else without my permission? My partner got COVID. They're completely disabled, can't walk, can't use their hands without my permission. Income is gone. Mommy died. Income's gone without my permission. My mother-in-law just died without my permission. But I have this thing called resilience. That I put one hand in God and one hand in this program. I've been here all weekend running back to the house, checking her temperature, giving her medicine, giving her insulin. And I come back here and I show up. I'm part of the No Matter What Club. Yeah. I'm in meetings all the time. I've been in hospitals and ICUs. I watch people taking their last breath. I've had a sponsee call me and talk to me about whatever, and I'm like, look at this step, read this to me. Then she goes, oh my God, what are you doing? My dad's dying, I'm watching him die. Are you serious? You should have told me. I think daddy's happy. He's like, get taking a break, you know what I'm saying? The whole time I was like, I don't know how to not do this program in the midst of all of it. It has given me sanity. It has given me meaning and purpose. And it has given me a God that is beyond measure. And sometimes I get to not be okay. And lately I've been feeling like I'm in a tsunami. And I'm thrown on shore. And there's a lot of broken pieces and rebels. And I'm just a little weary. I got a lot of gray hair. I may not be okay, but I know it's gonna be okay. Because this too shall pass. I don't ever want to be dying on the inside again, you guys. Sometimes I just want to act like everything is okay. And just smile and be like, I'm fantastic, how are you? God is so good. Well, if you knew, I'm like, no, it's not all the time, no. But we just keep coming back, and we keep coming back, and we throw ourselves harder into helping others. Nothing ensures permanent sobriety than working with another alcoholic. And hence, I'm here. I want to thank the God in you for allowing the God in me. Yo, this is like a big deal. Sobriety is such a big deal to me. I don't have words to describe this, y'all. This is so precious. This is the most precious thing I've ever been given. I don't know how to describe it sometimes. So that I can do the same for others. Oh, if nobody told you they love you today, I really, really do. You guys have no idea the 12-step call. You have always called on me. I love each and every one of you, even though some of you really piss me off. I want to thank you for dancing last night. For those who were dancing, I just want to say that was in commemoration of Mommy. She loved dancing, could never get off the floor, and I haven't been able to dance outside since she died. And so that was nice to do that yesterday, and they played Marc Anthony. It was kind of cool. Because she'd be like, that's my man, you know. And it was refreshing. And I did that with you guys, that I was able to, like, really enjoy that. After 2 years, I haven't been able to even listen to salsa, not even in my car. And that was very comforting for those who were there yesterday. It helped me. I felt at home and I felt safe with you. And I want to thank you so much because I just saw mommy on that floor. And again, I appreciate all of you of what you've given her, because in exchange, she's been able to pass it on to me. And it's changed the generations. My nephews, thank you so much for the opportunity that they now have as a result of the ripple effect that happens around here. So thank you so much, you all. Thank you so much for my life. Thank you.